This is RÚV English Radio with Darren Adam, daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, RÚV.
Hello, it's RÚV English Radio. I'm Darren Adam. Thanks very much for your company today. About a week or so ago, you'd have heard a conversation that took place at the Outfet space in Ísafjörður, a gallery space. We spoke to one of the artists who is in residence there, and indeed someone who is in control, you could say, of the artist residency program. That all happened in one half of the building where I was standing. In the other half of that building, the other half of that space, a new exhibition is about to launch on the National Day of Iceland, which is tomorrow. This is also the 40th year of the Outfet space in Ísafjörður. So who better to talk to than someone that can tell me, maybe not all about all of those 40 years, but certainly the plans for this year and the exhibition that launches tomorrow. That is Elisabeth Gunnarsdóttir, who joins me. What happens in that space?
Well, it's a gallery space for contemporary art. It was created 40 years ago, 1985, by a group of artists living and working in Ísafjörður. And they felt the need for a gallery space, a proper exhibition space only for art, because they'd been exhibiting all over town, in the library, community hall, and, you know, all over the place. But they wanted a gallery space.
And does it reflect Ísafjörður being a creative place, do you think?
Well, maybe it has contributed to Ísafjörður being a creative place. Well, of course, there's creativity everywhere. It's just how visible is it and how much cultivated. But the ambition was very high from the very beginning to exhibit work by emerging artists and established ones as well. We had world famous people there. Also, emerging artists, also to allow them to show what they can do. The space isn't very big, it's only 20 square meters, but it's very high to the ceiling, so it can accommodate almost anything. But it's also a very good size for a young artist for their first solo show, for example. So we've had many first solo shows there. And it's been there, we've run it all year round for, well, we had a little break for, maybe 2 or 3 years, the beginning of the century, but it's been there since 85.
Gosh, when you say phrases like beginning of the century, I just remember how old we all are, because that's 25 years ago. Let's look ahead then. Tomorrow is Iceland's National Day, and a new exhibition launches in the space tomorrow, doesn't it? Tell me about that.
Yeah. Well, it's a show by two Finnish artists, rather established artists who work together, Karolina Hellberg and Josefina Nellimarka. Their exhibition is connected to the Við Djúpið Music Festival, which is held every year in June, around the time of the summer solstice. And this year, it has a Finnish theme, so music and musicians, many of them come from Finland. And those two artists came last year, and since then they've been like in dialogue about what to exhibit in the space. One of them is, a painter, but it's more like extended painting, if you can say like that, drawing and painting. And the other one uses different kind of media, and in this case she will be showing glass work, things made of glass. And they're working with the building, the hidden stories of the building and the place. That's where the name comes from, parallel dimensions. So they work a little bit with, this hidden people thing, so hidden stories and many layers that we often don't notice or don't pay attention to.
Do you know stories then of the building?
Hidden stories?
Yes.
Oh, yes. But not necessarily of ghosts.
Okay.
But very interesting stories. But I'm not going to tell you.
Okay.
Me, they're sacred.
That's fair enough. So that all begins tomorrow. That exhibition runs for about a month, I think. We'll put details up on the page accompanying the show from Roof English Radio. But beyond that, I think you have a very prominent artist coming from the USA later in the season.
Because this is a very important program this year, I mean, we tried to do something special. So we invited an artist who is, well, she has an Icelandic passport, long-term relationship to Iceland. She's been coming here since she was 19, and she's been working a lot with Icelandic culture and nature and, you know. Mm. Her, she specializes a little bit, or she's always dealing more or less with identity and difference. Her name is Roni Horn. She was scheduled to have an exhibition at the gallery more than 20 years ago.
Mm.
but it didn't work out then, so we approached her and she was generous enough to accept the invitation. But she recently got her Icelandic citizenship.
Okay.
Maybe we are celebrating that as well.
Yeah, someone who was also in receipt of that, I'm very, very, very grateful. It's definitely worth celebrating, I think. So she is coming, and that will form part of this year as well at the space.
Yeah, it's a summer exhibition.
Yeah.
In the summer, we get so many visitors.
I wanted to ask about that because you are not terribly far away from where the cruise ships will land, or dock, I suppose, if that's the right word to use, in Ísafjörður. Do people just stumble across the space?
Yeah, they stumble across it, yes, of course. But then we also have brochures. Sometimes the guides tell them about us. On those cruise ships, you have all kinds of people. And we've experienced, we've had collectors, we've had artists from all over the world. And they are very surprised, often they're very surprised to find a place like that so far away from I don't know what.
Mm.
Because when people tell us we are remote, I usually ask, remote from what? The center of the world is where you are.
Yes.
So that's how we think. Anyway, we have a lot of people coming into the gallery. Sometimes they want to buy art to bring home. And we are not a commercial gallery, but of course we have some things on sale. So, and that's interesting. If people are interested in art, they find us.
We could talk about the rest of the year and other plans for the space in the conversation, but I want to just reflect on the conversation I had the last time I was standing in that space with one of the artists on the Arts Iceland residency, a Chinese artist who makes use of the land, not just the landscape, but makes use of the actual land and the creation of her materials using rocks to turn into pigment, for example. Is there a theme, do you think, with the artists that want to exhibit in the space, that their surroundings are important to them, that Iceland is important, that the Westfjords are important in their art?
The programme that artist was taking part in was the residency programme. So she was exhibiting her work and in the bookstore next to the
yes.
gallery. So the gallery has its own programme, and we have artists not... Well, sometimes that do a residency as well, but many of them don't. When we select artists to the residency program, we try to select artists that work with different themes, but what is very important for us is that they realize where they're going to.
Yes.
When you sit in Seoul or in, in Taiwan or in Australia, and apply for a residency in Iceland, do you know where you're going? Do you know what a place like Ísafjörður and the Westfjords are like?
Mm.
Of course, they can Google and find pictures and stuff. But usually people get very influenced or impressed by the surrounding nature. It's so close. It's so upon you there. And it's like... You just walk a few steps and you're in wild nature, yes. almost.
And even in the town of Ysafjörður, of course, you've got the very high hills, the high mountains either side of you. Even landing in the town, of course, at the airport, you are coming into almost very close contact with that raw, wild nature. So it's hard to miss, isn't it, even if you're in the town?
Yeah. I've noticed that when I travel, go away, and then when I come back, mm-hmm. I find the mountains very close by and very impressive and very... And then I stop noticing them. So, of course, when you... A newcomer always, like, this is so important. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But then they, you know, they go on hikes. You go into the next fjord on the next, and there are different landscapes and mm-hmm. different experiences. And, you know, so it's inevitable. But then we also... The seasons are so different in... the Westfjords compared to just like Reykjavik, the south of Iceland.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a huge big contrast between the winter and the summer. So that's also a different experience, you know.
It's a huge difference because yeah. here in the southwest it's very volcanic. Mm-hmm. But in the northwest of the country, in the Westfjords, in a lot of Iceland, during the summer, it's actually incredibly green. Mm-hmm. So what you don't have is just what you have here, which is an absence of snow. You've actually got a lot of greenery, particularly in the Westfjords. And I think that might be surprising to some people as well.
Yeah. Maybe the Westfjords are a hidden gem.
I think so.
it's like, of course, you want to, if you visit a country like Iceland, you'd like to see volcanoes and hot springs and whatever. We have hot springs in the Westfjords, but only really, really, really old lava, you know,
yes,
and
yes.
no danger of very few earthquakes. And
yes.
But it's a different kind of landscape, very different.
Mm-hmm. And again, when people put that to some kind of artistic purpose, fascinating to, as we saw last week, someone make use of the actual land, the soil itself, to make the artistic materials, never mind the art that they actually create with them. You said it wasn't just visual artists that can take part in the Arts Iceland residency. You've had musicians as well that have taken part, and they've put a very Icelandic stamp on their work, haven't they?
Yeah, sometimes we get, like, 2 years later, we get information about them publishing their music, and the music has Icelandic or local names from Ísafjörður. it's like, and I remember this Australian artist, musician, quite famous, beautiful music, and another one who lives in Canadian, who lives in Japan, and they compose their music in Ísafjörður, and then it has names like Engi, Arnardalur. Yeah, yeah. And then writers, of course, also have had writers who are very inspired. It's incredible what's out there. It is, you know, for us, it would be nice to be able to show more of that somehow.
Mm. So going back to the gallery space, going back to Árvert in Ísafjörður, we've touched on a couple of the things that are happening over the course of this year. The plans beyond those?
Well, we will just continue. The program for next year is not settled yet, but we will continue with this kind of... it's like 11 to 12 exhibitions a year. Sometimes we have pop-up exhibitions, mainly by, like, with Arts Iceland artists. Sometimes musicians or performances and stuff like that. But then the main exhibitions, or like the longer ones, mm-hmm. are 3 to 4 weeks. And so we'll continue like that.
Yeah, so you've got a reasonably clear idea of next year's program already. You're thinking that far ahead.
Yes, we have applications. Then we have curators that invite artists to come. We are engaged with all kinds of... art professionals who work with us on the programming.
Mm-hmm. And going back to something you said at the start of the conversation, it sounds as if this space has helped to connect artists across the Westfjords and helped to sort of foster a creative scene, or to make it more easy to be an artist in the Westfjords.
To have the art brought to you like that, you know, and good quality, like, you know, good quality exhibitions, and meeting the artists that come to exhibit,
yes.
is very important. But there's something else I've noticed, and it's difficult. You don't have any Excel document to confirm, you know, it has to be like... But I've noticed that children or young people growing up in Ísafjörður and in this area. I think this has affected the choice of what they wanted to do in the future. I've noticed there's so many people going into art, architecture, design, you know, all kinds of things like that. It's inspiring. And we teachers at the schools, we invite the schools to come and bring, you know, students. Certain teachers do on a regular basis. And I've seen the children learn so quickly because it's you know, to get them over the threshold into the gallery space is a huge big effort. You know, it goes for children and anybody else. But then when they're in there, you know, when you're only 12 and you're not used to this kind of thing, you talk like your father or somebody in the, you know, you say, you know, I could have done that. How much does this cost? You know, things like that. On the second visit, they start to ask questions. And on the third visit, they start to philosophize. It doesn't take more than 3 visits.
But it must be very rewarding for you to see that spark of interest suddenly go off.
Yes, I love that. Because to me, this is such an important part of being a human being, I must say. You know, to have this creativity, you don't have to become an artist. You just need to be interested or be aware of it as one way of, you know, understanding life.
Do locals in Ísafjörður also make use of the space? Do they go along and see what's happening?
I've often thanked the huge big window on the wall facing the main street.
Adalstræti, isn't it?
Yeah, Adalstræti means main street. Yeah. Next to the square, which is called Silver Square, and it's a natural square, is very uncommon in Iceland that, you know, that little towns have a town square that is not man-made. It just happened there, you know, naturally. Anyway, so many people see the exhibitions through the window. And they're aware what is happening there. I quite understand contemporary art can be so difficult to interpret sometimes and unapproachable, you know. You need help. sometimes, and it's also like, can be provocative and all kinds of things. So, of course that happens, but I think that the local people in general are rather proud of the gallery. I mean, they're equally proud of the gallery as they are of the male choir in town or whatever, or their football team, or, you know, they want this, you know, this kind of activity, and it's there, and it's, somebody is taking care of it, and very interesting people come and apply for it, and, you know, of course.
Well, I think they should be very proud of it. And I think if you find yourself in Ísafjörður, it's definitely somewhere that you should visit. We'll put a link to everything we've talked about here up on the page accompanying the show from Roof English Radio. But for now, Elizabeth, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
It is Roof English Radio. My name's Darren Adam, and today it is a double episode. So let's now move on with part 2 of today's show. Time for an episode of The Week in Iceland. And my guest today is Ari Paul Carlson, colleague here at Roof and the editor and host, one of the hosts of Krakafréttir, which is the kids' news here on Roof. Ari, hello.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you here once again. We've not spoken on The Week in Iceland for some time. And as I say, you look after the kids' news, Krakafréttir. And I know, because we've had lots of emails over the years, actually, people trying to pick up Icelandic here in Iceland, people trying to learn the language, will follow Krakafréttir because it's so beautifully spoken and it's in a slightly simpler form of the language as well.
Oh, that's great. Great to hear.
Yeah, so a useful service, not just for the kids of Iceland, but for the adults who are trying to pick up the language as well. Okay, let's take a look at what's been happening over the course of the last week or so. You can feel that things are slowing down a bit, aren't
they? Yeah, I can feel it. We call it gurka in Icelandic. This is the cucumber season.
Yes.
It's slowly crawling. We're crawling towards the cucumber season.
Yeah, I remember it being called that, but I can't remember why. What's the connection with cucumbers?
Wow, when that's a big question. I'm not quite sure. Maybe because it's kind of like a vegetable, or
only grows at a certain time.
Yeah, I think so. Okay. Or we were actually going to do an article about it last summer, but our cucumber season was cut short because of a volcanic eruption.
Yeah, this, of which, touch wood, there hasn't been one for some time. I wonder if things are settling down there as well.
Yeah.
We're having a conversation today on the 16th of June. Tomorrow is Iceland's National Day, which we will talk about as part of the conversation before the end of this episode of The Week in Iceland. But first, let's return to 5 days ago, when a lot of people who were minding their own business in Austurvöllur Square, the main square in the heart of the capital, next to Alþingi, next to the Parliament building, got a bit of a shock when a wheel fell off an aeroplane.
Yeah.
Big old wheel.
Both funny and frightening at the same time.
Yeah.
I'm glad no one got hurt. It was quite lucky. The area is densely populated.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a popular tourist attraction. But this is not supposed to happen. It happened, and no one was harmed. But the aircraft landed at Reykjavik Airport. We don't know exactly what happened, but it's been investigated.
This was the nose wheel, so the front wheel of the plane. It was a training flight, and if you're not clear, we're talking about Reykjavik City Airport, not the main airport at Keflavik, the city airport. That's where the plane was on its way to. But this is a big wheel. This is a big, heavy rubber metal item which landed and damaged one of the paving stones.
Yeah,
and there's a photo here on our website of the damage that was done just to the paving stone. You don't want to think about what would have happened if that had hit a person or even a car.
Exactly, but the investigation board of aircraft accidents are investigating the incident.
Yeah,
but it's been in the public discussion about not allowing, like banning these kind of airplanes in the Reykjavik City airport, moving the because this was not a, it was not a domestic, it was not a
passenger flight. Yeah. And so that's a separate conversation from the one that's taking place about the future of the airport there in the city, because a lot of people, many people will disagree, but a lot of people also say there shouldn't be an airport in the city. It is used for domestic flights. I was on one to Ísafjörður just a couple of weeks ago. You can go to Akureyri and Egilsstaðir, other flights around the country as well from that airport. But this conversation is about saying, let's not have these training flights so close to the city.
Yeah, exactly.
Go on.
And that's also, you know, they've been building new flats and selling them in the just right near the airport,
right up to the fence.
Yeah, right up to exactly. Yeah. And they can't sleep that long. You know, it's the disturbance is
yes
so much.
I think, I don't know when the last flight or the first flight is, but I've certainly had some early morning flights from that airport to head north or to head east or whatever. I don't know when the last one is at night. But yeah, you wouldn't want to be living next to any airport,
if the
flights are coming in late at night. But of course, I mean, for me, the main problem trying to get to sleep is not so much flights. It's the fact that the sun doesn't set till 12:30.
I remember we spoke about this last year.
Yes. Well, you know what I'm looking forward to? I'm looking forward to National Day tomorrow, without question. But I'm also looking forward to, I think it's the 22nd of June.
Yeah.
Which is 5 days away, because that's when things start to go back the other way.
Yeah, I remember we spoke about this. I think it was the last time I went. I was with you here.
Yeah, it's about a year
ago.
Week
in Iceland. Yeah, yes. But and then since then I've been thinking, you know, how used to the brightness us Icelanders are.
Yeah.
So, I actually think it. With age, it doesn't really settle as well, you know.
I find that, I mean, when I was like 22 or whatever, I could sleep anywhere.
Yeah.
In any circumstance, I could fall asleep on someone's floor after a party or whatever, wouldn't mind any sort of noise or light or anything. Now I need to basically sleep in a tomb. You know, it needs to be completely dark.
Yeah.
And it drives my other half nuts that I've, you know, we go on holiday and I'm there sort of pegging the curtains closed so that no light comes in or whatever into the hotel window. So I think it does get worse as you get older. But I really am looking forward to it being very, very dark again in the winter. And it's, you know, I'm from a northern part of the UK where we'd get sunset at like 10 o'clock at night.
Oh.
So I do, you know, I am sort of used to having those seasons and having the dark winters and the bright summers. I think they just annoy me more now than they did.
Yeah. I love the midnight sun. It's one of my favorite parts of summer. And I love to take walks almost at midnight.
When do you sleep?
Good question. But now, you know, if I go to bed at 1 a.m.
Mm.
or somewhere between midnight and 1 a.m., I feel like it's getting harder and harder as I age. I'm 27 now.
Mm.
It's not as easy as it used to be when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
And
come back to me 20s. At 52 and we'll talk. let's stay in the sky, actually, for our next story, because we did get into that by talking about the plane that lost a wheel. This is the airline Play, who are facing a proposed takeover, which is going to see, if it goes ahead, it's going to see Play reduce a lot of their services. It'll cease its flights to the US, reduce the number of cities it serves in Northern Europe. It will also surrender its Icelandic air operator certificate. It will move to being a Maltese license.
Mm.
Now, the president of the Icelandic Aviation Union says that he, A, found out about this at the same time as everybody else, and B, is very concerned for his members and what it means for the staff. This would be a big change, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be a big change for the inner structure of the company, but it's not that big of a change for consumers. They are still flying to their most of their destinations in Europe, at least, but they can't fly to North America because and countries outside of the European European Economic EEA.
Yes.
What's it called?
Yes. Of which Iceland is a member.
EES, we call it.
Yes, European Economic Area. Yeah. The UK, EA, of course, is not part of either of those.
Yeah, so
So that would be an issue for flights to the UK.
Yeah, it will be. Yeah, I think they I'm quite confident they will not be flying to the UK after the in the fall.
Yes,
but I'm not quite sure.
If this goes ahead as we expect it to, also more emphasis on flights to sunny holiday destinations. So
of course
that rules out the UK anyway, doesn't it? I suppose.
I would say that. Sorry, I'm sorry, sorry, Darren. he says Einar, the head of the company. They're focusing on strategy that has proved to be successful.
Mm-hmm. And this is about keeping the airline going, because I suppose one alternative vision might be that it folded.
The stock price has dropped
just
enormously. It has dropped from 20-something, if I recall correctly, to 0.8. But the takeover price is one krona per
stock. So it will stay alive as a company, but under different circumstances.
It's leaving the stock market.
Now, let's talk about a story from the weekend, from Saturday. As I say, we're having our conversation on Monday afternoon, and we don't know much more at the moment, but maybe that will emerge in the next few days. This is the double murder, it seems, at the Edition Hotel, which is one of the newest hotels in Reykjavik in the city centre. Two French tourists found dead at that hotel on Saturday. A third person, a woman with serious injuries, detained. And as I say, the suspicion is of that double murder.
Yeah.
And that's about all we know at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a family tragedy. As it looks, something happened in the final days of their holiday. A family of three, 60-year-old a woman in their 60s, her husband on around the same age, and their daughter somewhere around 30.
Mm. All with stab wounds.
Yeah, all with stab wounds. Also the woman.
Yes, the woman. Yes. The emergency call was at 7:14 in the morning.
Yeah.
The fourth floor of the hotel was secured, and the bodies of the two people who had died and the injured woman found in one of the rooms. So whatever has happened, this is a tragedy.
Yeah, it's a tragedy, and also quite of a shock, a bit of a shock, because this rarely happens in Iceland.
Yes.
Just murders are really, really...
They are rare, but it feels like we've been talking about them more and more in the last couple of years.
Yeah, yeah. In the last 2 or 3 years, there have been a little bit... There has been more, but experts have they haven't been confident enough to say there is a raise in the medium
in the rate. Yeah.
But because yeah. It could be, it's not a the data is only 3 years, but
okay.
But it's still more than we are used to.
And it does feel as if we're talking about this more. It feels as if there are more reports of more people being killed in Iceland than was the case maybe 5 years ago.
Yeah. But they're not so they're not confident to say that it's a trend, but it looks as it is.
And we may yet discover that it is once the statistics are in more fully. Mm-hmm. Like I say, whatever's happened here, and we don't know it at 2:20 this Monday afternoon, but whatever has happened, it is undoubtedly a tragedy. Mm-hmm. And another story that caught people's attention, a lot of sympathy in a very different direction for the orca whale that was sadly euthanized after it stranded itself for a second time. Now, this was a good news story for a couple of days, wasn't
it? Yeah, it was for one...
For a day, maybe.
For one day, 24 hours. They saved the orca from where it stranded, near Gravur, in Gravur. It was injured, but it swam away, and we thought it was going to be free and just swim off. But then it stranded again the day after.
In a slightly different location, it did swim back to shore. It stranded once again, as you say. Thora Johanna Johansdottir is the chief veterinary officer at MAST, which is the food and veterinary authority that we sometimes talk about, saying that decisions on whether to euthanize these animals always made with animal welfare considerations in mind. And basically the whale was very weak, which might have been one of the reasons why it stranded, but it certainly, from what she says, it would not have been able to survive. It didn't survive a second stranding.
So it was just the most humane thing to do.
Mm. Very sad. And not unusual, not unheard of, but very often it is possible that, as I say, these are good news stories. When the whale can be refloated, it looked as if that was going to be what was going to happen here, but it wasn't to be, unfortunately.
But a lot of times they manage to save the whales that strand here.
Yes, we will not stop trying to save those whales we believe have a chance of coping, the words of Thora. Okay, let's look ahead to tomorrow, the 17th of June, Iceland's
Woo-hoo.
National Day. And we're marking two things, aren't we? We're marking the end of Danish rule over Iceland, when Iceland finally broke away from the Danish crown in 1944.
Yeah.
The birthday of Jón Sigurðsson,
yes,
who was the man who pushed for independence.
Exactly, in the 19th century. He's one, we learned about him in school. He's one of our, founding fathers, so to speak. He's, if we were to find this similarity between Iceland and the US, he's strived for our independence.
Mm.
It was his 200th birthday a few years back in 2011.
Yes.
And I was in school back then. We were supposed to write him a letter.
Okay.
From the future. And there was this competition, and I had one of the letters that I won the competition.
Well done.
Thank you very much. And I remember being 13, uh-huh. reading this letter for my community in Mosesbad.
Yes, yes.
And it was a great memory from 17th of June. And
do you remember what you said?
Yeah, I said because there was this monopoly of food. We got sent the worst crops and the worst
from Denmark.
Yeah, okay. We were only allowed to buy certain crops, and they were all bad. They were like eaten by there were some parasites that came with it, and it was just terrible. So I found the similarity between the Danish authorities and my school.
How did that go down with your school?
They encouraged me. They were really.
Was this a comment on your school lunches or something?
No, because yeah, it was.
It was.
Yeah, the fish in the school. I wasn't that keen eating fish when I was a kid. So
right, okay.
I said.
So you said this is as bad as the food we were sent from Denmark.
Yeah,
years
exactly.
Ago.
Okay. And I went further and said the teachers got their great, like the best food. I said the teachers were like the Danish authorities. they were feasting while
they were feeding the elites.
Yeah.
Well, a couple of weeks ago, I was at Hrafnseyri in the Westfjords, which is the birthplace of Jon Sigurdsson, and you can hear that program tomorrow on Roof English Radio. It'll publish around 16:30, around 4:30. But what do you think Jon would have made of how Iceland finally got its independence? Because this in 1944, it was a referendum, it was during the war. Some people sort of look at it and say that Iceland sort of grabbed its chance to become independent when people's attention was looking elsewhere.
Yeah.
Do you think he would have been surprised by how it happened?
No, I don't think so. It's the Icelandic way, I think, being like being the underdog for so long and then
just grabbing that moment.
we are quite an opportunist nation, I would say. I wouldn't be surprised. He probably looked from the skies above and thought, that's my nation.
And do you think people on the 17th of June are celebrating him? Do they know enough about him?
I would say we are taught so much about him. He's on our banknotes on the.
But who uses money anything?
Exactly. So I'm not sure if the banknote is that big of a thing anymore. but yeah, he's also in popular culture. We're always talking about Jon Sigurdsson. He's one of our biggest guys.
And he's still to this day at the heart of the celebrations in the capital tomorrow because his statue is
where the nose, where the plane.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
if the wheel from the plane had hit the statue of Jon, what would that be saying? That wouldn't be a good look, would it? That statue is also in Östervöllur Square, and there are flowers brought, aren't there, each year to him.
And tomorrow, for the first time in God knows how many years, if ever, the president will do the opening ceremony, like the speech at the beginning of the ceremony, instead of the prime minister.
So why is that happening? Why is it the president, not the PM?
She wants to take the political aspect out of the national.
That's really interesting.
Big day.
How interesting. Okay, so handing that role then over to the president, who is not really a political person in Iceland. I know that there have been politicians who have run unsuccessfully to become president, but it's not a political role. Mm-hmm. So this is about the unity of the nation, I guess.
Yeah,
tomorrow.
It is.
What will you be doing tomorrow?
Good question.
Well, the first question is, are you working tomorrow?
No. I'm lucky.
That opens up a whole range of possibilities. Yeah,
after I switched from the news department to Krakafréttir, I have a free. I have a day off.
So you can do anything you want outside of this building?
I will probably stay at home working in the lawn, helping my family. And maybe I will go to a parade and downtown to see the the celebrations.
There's lots happening, not just in Reykjavik. In fact, you'll find on the Ruv English website a bit later on details of what's also happening in Ísafjörður and in Akureyri and in Selfoss as well, because this is, of course, not just a capital event. There are events and celebrations taking place right across the country, and we've not even touched on the Fjallakonan, the women from the mountains, yeah. Because each town has a different one. But we don't know who the Fjallakonan is in Reykjavik, do we?
I haven't heard.
Your ear close to the ground, and the weather looks like it's going to be okay.
Yeah,
for tomorrow.
We've been lucky. Last time we spoke, which was 1 year ago, there was snow. In June, but we got some snow in the northern part, especially, but it hasn't been as bad as last.
Well,
last
when I was in the Westfjords, not even 10 days ago it would have been, and I drove up to Bolafjall, which is the viewing platform near Bolungarvik, which is near Ísafjörður, but as far north and west as you can go. It's where you can stand and supposedly see Greenland over the water, but not really. And that road, it's a pretty narrow, twisty road up to Bolafjall. There was still some snow on it.
Yeah.
Now, there wasn't very much snow. There was maybe a kind of 20-meter stretch of snow. Mm-hmm. And it's a very narrow road. When I was driving back down, there was a car in front of me that was stuck, driven by an Icelandic couple. They were coming up the hill. And I don't know how they managed to do it, but they managed to get stuck in this tiny little patch of snow. And they were driving a Suzuki Jimny, which is a 4x4. Yeah. It should have been okay. And so I was trying to push them and help them and say, I'm really sorry, there's someone else coming. Maybe they can help you. I've got to go and interview someone in Ísafjörður. But I can't figure out how they did it.
No.
It's really, really difficult to get stuck in that tiny patch of snow. And the point of that was, snow in June is not impossible.
No.
But we're not expecting any tomorrow.
Let me be 100% sure.
Okay.
But we've been lucky. Actually, the weather in May was the warmest May in, I think, 100 years. Wearing shorts for the first time in maybe 2 years or something.
Yeah, well, if you saw my legs, you'd know why I'm not in favor of wearing shorts. Probably not a good idea. We think the weather's going to be fine tomorrow anyway for the celebrations, not just in Reykjavik. No snow tomorrow. Well, that's good. Okay. Ari, thanks very much indeed. We shall talk again.
Yeah,
and,
my pleasure.
Maybe we can talk once Krakafréttir is back on the air in September.
Yeah, exactly.
When those stories for younger viewers and those learning Icelandic will be back on your TV. You've still been checking the weather forecast there, haven't you? Still nothing.
Okay. No snow.
Good stuff. All right. Thanks very much. We shall talk again. This is Ruv English Radio. My name's Darren Adam, and you can get in touch anytime. English@ruv.is.
There's more from Ruv English with all the news from Iceland in English at ruv.is/English. Ruv English Radio is daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, Ruv.